Good afternoon and welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to Kildare's KFM. It's Wednesday, the 4th of October. Caoimhe Hearney here with you until 3. Coming up first on today's show, we'll be speaking to the ISPCA. The first National Animal Week in Ireland is this week from the 1st to the 7th of October, and it's launching with the Cruelty No More campaign. They're also highlighting a report that's out today which sees an unprecedented number of dogs being abandoned this year. Later then we'll speak to Alex Ainsworth, Digital Media and Communications Officer at Drink Aware, because Sober October is the month for mindful drinking. And then lastly we'll hear from the founder of Wednesday Wedding Club. She's from Kildare and she'll be telling us how you can get a stress-free wedding planning in. If you want to get in touch with the show, of course, you can text in 0833 97 97 97. You can call in 045 898 9999, and you can also email me to studio@kfmradio.com.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, the Irish Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, or of course the ISPCA, is marking the launch of Ireland's first ever National Animal Week with their Cruelty No More campaign. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Dr. Cyril Sullivan, CEO of ISPCA. Good afternoon, Cyril.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. Good to talk to you.
Delighted to have you on, Cyril.
Happy World Animal Day. You know, it's the 4th of October. It's the feast day of St. Francis of Assisi, and he was the patron saint of saints, of animals. So today is World Animal Day, and so happy World Animal Day to you and your listeners.
Thank you very much again for
the opportunity to talk to you through our National Animal Week and our Cruelty No More campaign and the events we're running for the week. So look, delighted to talk to you.
Talk to us then about the events that are happening, and why is this the first National Animal Week in Ireland? Do they do it in other jurisdictions?
No, we didn't operate on that basis. What we have is a, and you mentioned it in your introduction, we have an unprecedented level of cruelty in terms of particularly the number of dogs that we've rescued during this year. So it's been a very, very challenging year for us. So for us, we want to make sure that we communicate this with the public. So we've, put this campaign together around World Animal Week because we want to be able to highlight it and get people that, you know, you'll see in the research, 50% of the population of Ireland have a dog. So a lot of animal lovers in Ireland, so we want to be able to sort of highlight it. So we want to bring attention to the increasing numbers of animals going into cruelty. And we also want to promote responsible dog ownership, you know, so that people who do see things happening or whatever, they know whether it's good or bad, and they get advice, and even for themselves in terms of how they treat their animals, you know, to give that advice. We have our helpline, our animal helpline in Longford, and we receive about 10,000 calls a year from the public, and, you know, about 2,500 of those end up in inspections. And it's just, again, people are fully aware, you know, but just, again, for us to make, you know, just to make it known the challenges that we're facing in 2023.
Absolutely. Tell us some of the events that are happening. I know we're halfway through the week, but still a few days and nights ahead. So I'm sure some interesting things coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have, you mentioned there as well that we were delighted to have a research paper prepared for us. Mars Ireland sponsored us. It was carried out by a morgue surveys, and they looked at an issue for us. So there's two issues in terms of what's driving the numbers up. We've narrowed them down to this. There's a whole series of reasons for it, but we've narrowed down to two main reasons. One being breeders and large numbers of dogs post-COVID not being taken up by the public, and then secondly, because people have gone back to work, our own dogs that we've rescued are not going into homes as much as they were. So there's been a reduction in the rehoming. So for the rehoming piece, the research was carried out. So the first piece of the events for this week is to highlight that research work that was carried out for us. And it makes for a very interesting reason. I said 50% of the population of Ireland, or, you know, 50% of the homes in Ireland have a dog. Of the people who don't have dogs, those who considered bringing them in, about 60% of those considered bringing the dogs in decided against it. And obviously from our point of view, from an ISPCA point of view, that's important information for us because our work is to rescue animals from difficult situations to rehabilitate them, and we invest on veterinary care and our own animal care systems, making sure that we spend time to bring the animal to full health and full happiness and ready to go into its forever loving home. And that's, it has, you know, for us, that's the ultimate outcome. It's a kennel, no matter how good a kennel is not a forever loving home. So we want to be able to make sure we understand why people adopt and why people don't. Mm. So the research has really helpful in that regard. So what we've discovered is that the reasons people decided against it, and understandably, they say issues like cost, issues like concerns or worries about a rescue dog. You know, is it as healthy as a dog from a breeder, or is it as well behaved? And other issues around travelling. You know, if you go abroad and you have to get kennels, you know, those sort of considerations, those issues are all highlighted in terms of the research. So, well, the ICCA and for myself, I suppose we have to reflect on that. What I suppose we would say is that a lot of those issues, you know, the benefit of taking from a rescue as opposed to a breeder would be that we don't disappear. You know, you take the dog in and you adopt, but we're still here to help. And one way that people can adopt is to foster, you know, in the sense that they don't have to commit themselves fully up front. They can decide to take the animal in for a few weeks or even a few months and see, does it work for their family, for themselves? And in the main, when people do that, they do go ahead with it because, as I said, those issues that people were putting forward as reasons for not moving ahead actually evaporate, and the benefit of the animal to the family, to the kids, is, you know, phenomenal. Mars carried out research for last year, and 90% of those who adopted found that the health and happiness and mental health of the family improved significantly when they got the animal in. So for us, as I said, this research is really helpful. It helps on the rehoming front. It helps us to be able to advise anybody who's thinking about it, you know, to adopt, don't shop, you know, adopt from a rescue, don't take from a breeder, and help us to get through the challenging times we face with the you know, unprecedented number of dogs we have in our care.
All right. Just for context then, Cyril, between January and August this year, 724 dogs were rescued by the ISPCA. So, like, a huge number of dogs there. Obviously, you need people to come forward. You need people to adopt if they can. But in terms of people who do maybe adopt, or maybe they haven't taken a dog from yourselves, but they went, they got a dog and they give it back because they can't deal with the maybe it's a little bit troublesome, behavioural issues. Do you think that people just aren't schooled enough in how to actually train a dog, have a dog, and you know, general life with a dog?
Yeah, that's really, really a good question because, yeah, it's a case that, you know, it is a big commitment and, you know, especially in the initial stages because it is a change. We effectively have, you know, dogs and cats and horses are all sentient animals. They feel the same things as us. They feel happy, they feel sad. They have to be fed and watered, they feel hungry, and they suffer and they feel... So all of those things have to be taken care of by anybody taking the dog in. However, as I said, once it happens and they're brought in, people have the support of ourselves. So we have a whole range of supports in terms of providing advice to the owners. We carry out extensive checks to make sure that, you know, we've taken an animal from cruelty, that they're going to go into a good home, that people are fully aware of what they're expected to do. So generally speaking, that doesn't become as big an issue. But it, obviously during COVID and post-COVID, it did increase in terms of the number of people wanting to give up. But the research also shows that those who did give up, and I think it was interesting to sort of see that, they gave, it was 8%, I think, was the number that we found of those who had a dog and then decided that the circumstances changed and they wanted to, you know, have us rehome somewhere else. That cohort of people never mentioned cost, which I think was interesting because people are afraid to take it out of home because cost wasn't the cost. It was more to do with their own circumstances changing. They changed house, or, you know, more people came in and they had less room, and they had to, you know, weigh up, you know, in terms of what they can give and what they can't. So I think, you know, you're right. It's an important decision. It's a decision for life, you know, and you're not just buying for a few weeks. You have to consider it.
Yeah.
And to avoid a situation, just to say, I suppose, to avoid a situation where you're relinquishing after a year. So we just say, look, plan for the costs, budget, you know, talk to your vet, make sure you understand you know, if you take a rescue from us, the dog is vaccinated, has spayed and neutered, and, you know, so all of the main veterinary costs have been covered by ourselves. So you take the animal in, it's just ongoing veterinary treatment, meet your vet and make sure that you understand what it is. And generally speaking, when people do that, they find it's not as bad as they thought. On top of that, then, costs like handling costs when you're going on holidays. Even for myself, we have friends who have dogs, and what we do is we share. You know, if somebody's away, they leave it with us, their animal with us, and we leave theirs, you know, and you can cut out a very significant cost there.
Yeah, so that's the ways handy and
means, yeah, the ways and means of getting around these things with a little bit of, you know, thought and a little bit of planning.
Okay.
And that will avoid a situation where somebody will end up saying, I've took it, but I'm going to leave it back. Mm. In terms of temperaments, again, just to say, we bring our animals through an extensive rehabilitation process. They are happy and healthy. And on top of that, I mentioned to you earlier about the forms and the applications. They're all fillets. We do home checks. We match the dog to the family, and therefore the chances of it not working out go down. And then, as I said, the other option in terms of the parachute for anybody who is thinking about it, but isn't 100% sure, is the foster, you know, they can take it in. But just to go on in terms of the events for this week, because of puppy farms and the issue with puppy farms, the legislation around that, Kiva, is the Dog Breeder Establishment Act of 2010. So we've a letter written on policy, just a policy paper from us to be presented to the ministers for agriculture and community rural development around dog control and the various issues that we're facing at the moment. Because obviously, if we can enforce the law better around breeding, and therefore good breeders would be saved and get rid of the bad ones, it would be a big help to us in terms of the amounts we have to rescue. The Rehoming Research has said, Mars, and thank you again to Mars Ireland and to Mark for the great work on that. And as I said, that's been really helpful to us. Finally, then, at the end of the week, we are running running an event in Wicklow. It's a cycle event, and it's called A Cycle Away from Cruelty. And a number of us here in the ISPCA are going to do the cycle. So myself, our chief inspector, and four of our directors are going to do the cycle in Wicklow, a circuit. And we want to highlight, you know, this as an event where we're promoting, you know, it's a fun event on one level, but it's a serious thing for us in terms of an event to highlight the need to cycle and to move away from cruelty. We want to end cruelty in Ireland. So that event, Saturday, we'd ask the public to, you know, donate ispca.ie and donate if they so wish, and to support us. It is a difficult time for us, and we're really anxious to, you know, make sure we can get through it. And our support and our strength has come from the public. I'd also highlight that we are, in the ISPCA, we have our affiliate members. So if you take Kildare West Wicklow, Wicklow SPCA is now ISPCA Wicklow, a number of affiliates around the country are also in similar circumstances to ourselves. So if anybody is looking, you know, to help us, we'd really appreciate it. And if they can volunteer and help and donate to their local affiliate, that is Housing Kildare West Wicklow. And a big hello to John and to Sally out there. You know, that type of thing would really help.
All right, Cyril, how would one know the difference between a good breeder and a bad breeder? Because perhaps, you know, you're not au fait with animals, perhaps you haven't been around dogs most of your life. So if you're going to get a dog, and perhaps you want a certain type of dog, maybe you want a cockapoo, maybe you want a poodle, whatever, how do you know that the breeder that you're going to is legit?
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of puppy farms, and puppy farms generally where dogs are not being treated well are being sold, and people wouldn't be aware. So what we'd advise is, one, make sure that you get a track record for the breeder. You know, you do a bit of homework in terms of them being around and any references that you can get in terms of other people who've dealt with them. Yeah, in some instances, there's been stories of Airbnb properties being rented and illegal breeders would show as if they just had a few dogs and were handing them out. Again, check the location, check the breeder's location, check the dog breeder's establishments lists. You'll get those from the local authorities in the area, you know, to make sure that they're licensed. And, you know, assure yourself that this is not a bogus and you're going to end up with an animal that you're charged a lot of money for it, but you end up probably having to do more work to bring the animal back to full health. As I said, for us, those checks are very important. But for us in the ISPCA, those checks are all taken care of, you know, and we're just saying that, you know, we would advise everybody to adopt, don't shop, you know. So if you are going for a breeder, it's absolutely no problem at all. it's a good thing to do to take an animal in and give it a loving home. But given the number of dogs and the range of dogs that we have in our rescues at the moment, we would really encourage people who are thinking about it to adopt. Don't shop.
Okay, and just to give out the number for the ISPCA, if anyone needs to call in or report anything, it's 0818 515 515. That's 0818 515 515. And Cyril, go ahead.
Yeah, keep it on. Yeah, we really appreciate it. That's our helpline. So if anybody has any concerns, if anything they've seen or they see an animal that needs to be helped, we have our line inspectors across the country who respond, and our call centre is ready to take the call. In terms of the campaigns, it's ispca.ie/donate. If you go to our website on the cycle, as I said, and you want to sponsor us, it would be terrific. If you want to do your own cycle, to cycle away from cruelty and to help us end cruelty in Ireland and make a donation to us, that would be appreciated as well.
Okay, Dr. Cyril Sullivan, CEO of the ISPCA. Thank you very much, Cyril, for joining us this afternoon.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, we have moved to an age of more mindful drinking, and that brings in the whole Sober October thing. So why has mindful drinking become so popular? Well, I'm joined on the line now by Alex Ainsworth, Digital Media and Communications Officer at Drink Aware. Good afternoon, Alex.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say. Thank you so much
still
for having me on.
Still
the best.
Alex, I think in more recent years, more people are kind of turning towards trying to stay off, you know, alcohol maybe midweek or, you know, like Sober October, those kind of things where 10 years ago you'd never hear tell of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? It's a really positive thing that people are doing, you know, not just for October. You know, I know you have your dry Januaries and your dry Julys and your sober Octobers, but we are seeing a trend in people who are choosing to either drink less, or they're becoming sober curious, or just living a sober lifestyle. And you know, a huge motivation for this is that, like, you know, 32% of Irish people want to drink less to improve their mental health. And, you know, there's so many options out there for people to choose. And I think that's also why we're seeing a big rise as well. There's more options of non-alcoholic drinks. People don't, you know, they don't want to feel the negative effects of alcohol. And, you know, they also can save a bit of money, especially around the Christmas, coming into the Christmas season. And maybe it's too early to say it, but, you know, save a bit of money. But there's loads of benefits to, you know, going sober, even for a month, and trying out the Sober October.
What I find is really interesting, Alex, that you often hear people who do this maybe for October or for Dry January, and they just don't ever go back drinking because they feel brilliant, they've more money, which is always a plus, especially now. And just generally, they feel like they have more clarity in the things that they do day to day.
Yeah, and you know, that's a big, you know, factor when you give up alcohol even for a few days, or cut back on alcohol for a few days, a month, a week, and whatever it is. You know, you are going to notice both physical differences to yourself and, you know, mental differences. So you'll notice that, like, your mental health might start improving. You're not going to wake up with the fear after you've been on a night out. You know, you might save a little bit more money because you're not spending what you would on drinks. You like that, like what you said, that mental clarity, you know, you have more energy, that brain fog might go, and you'll have more energy to, you know, pick up a hobby or, you know, do a bit of exercise that maybe you've been putting off for a while, get into that book that you wanted to read. You know, you have the energy to do that. And that's a really great thing that we're seeing at Drink Aware now, that, you know, we're seeing it up on online, that there's loads of groups that people can join now. So, you know, you have your Sober Sally's, your Sober Girls Ireland and Babes About Beers, and loads of other groups as well that you can join, that if you're not, you know, too convinced about going on a night out, you're not too keen about going on a night out sober, but you want to try different events, you know, go onto their websites or their, you know, their pages, their Instagrams, and you can do events with them. And they're hosting really brilliant ones now coming into October as well.
And I think I made the point on the show before, Alex, that a lot of people really, you know, I know for my own group for many years, I don't think we ever really met up unless we were drinking, not because we were, you know, these crazy alcoholics, but because we just always went to the pub every weekend. And that was really what our friendship was based on. Mm. Now that has changed. I definitely think since COVID, you know, even the dating world in Ireland has changed as well. Beforehand, I think it would be untold that a person would go for a coffee on a first date, maybe. But then, you know, with the pubs closed, people had to start changing and shifting how they did things.
You know, absolutely. Like you said, you're seeing a shift in not just the social aspect of people not wanting to go for a few drinks in the pub on a Friday night or a Thursday night or whatever it is, but also in the dating world. You know, you're seeing people like that going for a coffee, going for a walk for a first date. And I think that's really lovely that people are having that confidence to do that now. And I think, you know, we were sort of pushed into it with COVID because the pubs were closed, but people are kind of pushing back and going, you know, I don't need to go and have an evening, you know, and go for a drink. You know, I can go for a nice coffee or something, or go for a lovely walk. And there's that, you know, more connection. It's during the day and you're not giving up the whole evening. You know, it might be an hour or two. So you're having that as well. And it's just something else to do. Like, you know, our lives don't need to revolve around, like, especially our social lives, they don't need to revolve around alcohol. There's so many beautiful places that you can go visit to, like in Ireland for free as well, like that. Walks, hikes, you know, going for a coffee, loads of social events. You have there's a coffee and draw that you can do that I know some of the event places are running now, where you just have a coffee and do drawing instead of drink and draw.
Okay.
So it's brilliant. There's so many more options out there for people who want that kind of sober lifestyle, but think that, you know, life might be still revolving around alcohol. But we really are seeing that change, that it is being pushed kind of to the side a little bit, and people are experiencing, you know, more day activities that don't involve alcohol, which is brilliant.
Alex, do you think that even now, though, people are reluctant to maybe go on a night out? You know, if your friends are going, you want to go, but you don't want to drink. It can be quite a tricky subject to broach if you go out, like, especially if you're not driving. People will be like, right, you're not driving. Are you pregnant? Like, at my age, if I was to go out, any of my girls came out and they weren't drinking, people would straight away say, oh, are you pregnant? Which isn't right, but it is what people jump to. How do you kind of say it in a normal way without people kind of saying, oh, God, why isn't she drinking? Does she have a problem?
A brilliant question. You know, at DrinkAware, we do actually get asked this kind of frequently, and it is said, and we do talk about it, and we actually have some blogs about this up on our website at drinkaware.ie if people want to have a look at that, about, you know, saying, having, like, not excuses, but having a few kind of sentences in your pocket for when you go out. Number one, you know, people shouldn't be asking, you know, are you pregnant? Are you on your antibiotics? Oh, you must be driving. Like, they shouldn't be asking that. I know that people are curious about it, but, you know, at the end of the day, if someone doesn't want to drink, that's up to them, and it shouldn't be a big deal, because it's not a big deal. And asking people if they're pregnant is just such a no-no, and people shouldn't be doing that, because that can be a very touchy subject. But, you know, we have a couple of tricks up our sleeve. You know, one, you can always say no. And especially for people who are in college or in, like, especially the younger age groups, that can be really daunting, because there is that sort of peer pressure that, you know, might be there as well. Kind of going, oh, sure, have a drink. Or you might feel like you need a drink to fit in. You know, there are the no and low options. Like, there are non-alcoholic options. So if you don't feel confident going out and, you know, without maybe a drink in your hand, you can get a non-alcoholic drink that looks pretty much the same, and you might still have that confidence then, and people won't really be asking you, like, oh, aren't you having a drink? Because you have your no and low, and they look pretty much the exact same. So there is that, you know, and we have more information about this on our website as well.
Okay. Alex Ainsworth, Digital Media and Communications Officer at drinkaware.ie. Thanks very much, Alex, for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Keep your messages coming in 0833 97 97 97. Now, I was asking what the biggest waste of money at your wedding or a wedding that you have been to, and Mary in Athy has texted in to say wedding favours, as most of them get left behind. So thanks, Mary, for that one. And Nicola in Clane says candy carts. I have to disagree, Nicola, because I love the candy carts. I'm a big sweet tooth, so I'm kind of like the only adult over there just filling up my bag or filling up whatever is there. And I think they're great. If there's children at the wedding as well, they're always great. But I take your point. Maybe your guests didn't eat any of the sweets. But a lot of talk today. Someone has texted in, Veronica has texted in to say so much talk about bed bugs today. And I did mention it yesterday, but it's worth mentioning again, especially if you're heading over to France this weekend for the Ireland-Scotland game, because the French government has said it is hosting emergency meetings this week to examine surging numbers of reported bed bug cases, which are being increasingly seen as a major potential public health problem. So bed bugs have in recent weeks gone from being a subject of potential derision into a contentious political issue in France, with aghast citizens reporting seeing the creatures in locations including trains, the Paris metro and cinemas. And the concerns have gained added weight with France in the throes of the hosting the World Cup, and then Paris preparing to welcome athletes and fans from around the world for the Olympics, of course, next year. So if you are going over, my brother and his girlfriend and a few of their friends are going over, and I've been sending her all of the links saying, like, don't get on the train and don't get on any buses, because I don't know, like, it just looks disgusting. And if anyone has seen the pictures or any of the videos, like, it would make your skin crawl. I was kind of itchy earlier on just looking at it. Doctors have said that bed bugs can actually live for a year without human flesh. So even if there was no one sleeping in a room or no one getting on to a train or whatever, they can live in the, you know, the crevices of seats, you know, clothes, whatever, for a year. So a fairly serious situation. But yeah, apologies for bringing it up, but I felt like I couldn't let it go. 0833 97 97 97. Now, moving on to some wedding day planning. Perhaps you have a big day coming up. Emma Greenbury, founder of Wednesday Wedding Club and from Kildare Town, joins me on the line. Good afternoon, Emma.
Good afternoon, Cleaver. How are you going?
Emma, you started Wednesday Wedding Club. Why did you start it?
I started Wednesday Wedding Club because I noticed a gap in the wedding market, I suppose you could say, in Ireland. And I just thought, you know, there needs to be something unique. There needs to be someone who kind of brings all people's wedding ideas together in a kind of a different way than what has been done. No more white weddings, something a little different. I just wanted to kind of see what we could create, and it's gone well so far.
Okay, so did you start this because you were planning your own wedding?
No, I didn't. I just love weddings, and I've worked in events for years, and I just thought, you know what, it's something that I'm passionate about. I love helping people, and it kind of all came together.
Okay. So you're kind of going down the road of maybe, you know, alternative weddings. It doesn't have to be in the hotel, white dress, all the bridesmaids, etc. You want something different.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I still do help people who want something a little like that, but mostly I help people who want a wedding that doesn't look like everyone else's. It's kind of creating those Pinterest dreams that they see, you know, something a little more colourful, more unique and personalised to them.
Okay, what advice would you give then for people who are planning a wedding? And you're saying that you can do it stress-free, but how?
Yeah, so I guess stress-free is really something that comes from allowing someone else to kind of take over if you want to go down the route of a wedding planner per se. But I mean, if you're doing it on your own, there's lots of things you can do, and getting help from someone else is a great start. But yeah, having a stress-free wedding, I would say that you need to start as early as you can. If you want to start doing something, I would do look at the budget, look at how many people are going to be coming to this wedding. You know, cutting out your guest list as well can alleviate some stress, because the minute you start putting RSVPs or asking for RSVPs on your invites, you're starting to create stress where people are going to be trying to contact you. They're going to be wanting to start talking to you about this wedding, and then you're going to get people's ideas coming in as well. So people are going to start putting their two cents in saying, you should have a wedding like this, you should have a wedding like that. And yeah, having someone on your side, so say a wedding planner or someone who can help, whether it's someone at the venue or the wedding planner, you know, will be able to create a stress-free wedding by looking at all your suppliers, taking over all of that sort of communication. Communication is definitely the most stressful part, I find, when I talk to couples, because they're just overwhelmed with the amount of back and forth that goes on.
Very worryingly for people out there trying to get married, maybe, the average cost of a wedding, $30,000.
Yeah, I mean, I am seeing that myself, and I definitely believe personally that a wedding shouldn't have to cost this much. Yeah. And having a wedding planner, I definitely think I help save people money all the time. There's so many things that people don't realize are costing them too much. Or, you know, there's this old kind of saying where people are like, oh, you know, the minute you mention wedding, that means that someone will add a cost on. And yes and no, that's true. But I think having someone to negotiate for you can help save quite a lot of money, and making some good cost savings as well. You know, there's things you can go without. You don't need to go over the top with so many things. You know, people say wedding favors is just a no, like that sort of thing. You can save heaps of money on that. You can save money on printing things. You can do lots of things digitally now. So there are a lot of things you can try and save on, definitely.
Okay. You mentioned there, when people hear wedding, you know, they tend to think, you know, more money. And it's interesting. I actually worked years ago in a place where someone organized like an event, and we didn't know what it was. They came in anyway on the day, and they started putting up flowers everywhere, different arrangements, and at the end of the day, then my boss was like, they were smart, because if I'd known it was a wedding, I probably would have charged up. So is that true?
Like
could you go in and be like, I'm having a 60th birthday for 40 people? Seriously.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I mean, the wedding suppliers all work so hard. And I think, you know, there is this extra kind of thing that goes into it. And I think I've had people actually before, where I've had someone who was one of my clients who said to their wedding cake designer, you know, it's for a birthday. And it became fairly obvious, you know, when they had to deliver the cake on the wedding day to the wedding, that it wasn't that way. And it felt a little bit cheeky in that sense. So I don't personally think, you know, we should obscure that sort of thing. We shouldn't say, oh, this could be this much. There's so many other clever ways to save money on a wedding without having to kind of lie about what you're doing. Yeah,
absolutely. And we'll hear those in a minute, Emma. But like, if the cake was going to be the same and they were going to charge up because it was a wedding, do you not think that's sneaky in itself either? Do you know?
Totally. I think, but the thing is that I think we think these sorts of suppliers are underneath or whatever. They're definitely not, in my experience. Mm-hmm. I don't think they are pricing differently, really. I think people do think that that's the case. But, I mean, there is extra care and consideration that goes into, say, a wedding cake versus a birthday cake. They are completely different cakes, in a sense. I know that the ingredients and so on, but there are other things that have to go on with that, and making it look and feel the right way that you want it to. And yes, I would not want to lie. I wouldn't want people to do that. But yeah, there are more clever ways. Yeah.
I'm not telling people to lie. I'm just asking the question. That's all, Emma.
How can people
save money then without lying or being sneaky?
So I think there's some things that I, like, obviously first is just a guest list. You know, don't invite people who you definitely don't really need to be there. So, I mean, there's this pressure a lot from families. I find that people are asked to invite, you know, neighbours and friends of friends and cousins and all of that sort of stuff. And I know that at weddings you do get some money back and things like that, obviously, from gifts. But, I mean, that's a good way to save money. Your head, you know, per head cost there is substantial if you're getting a bigger list. Venues and things like that. There's a lot that do these sort of all-inclusive packages. You can look at just a venue cost. I think one thing that I wouldn't recommend always, depending on your budget, if you have a large budget, absolutely try it. If you want to do it, then do it. But marquee weddings, they are, for me, a no-go. If you are having a low-budget wedding, don't even bother. It's just going to cost you far too much. You'll be way better off. Yeah, a marquee wedding. I've had people come to me and be like, I want a marquee in my backyard. It's so complex. You need flooring, lighting, toilets, catering, tables, chairs, literally everything that you have at a venue, you need to bring. And that just adds to complexity. You have more and more suppliers coming. You'll have more and more people to pay. It just, it ends up and ends up being this sort of elaborate, I guess you could say, big event that just doesn't need to be. I would say that, yeah, there's other ways to save money. So I wouldn't do too many wedding favors or any at all, unless they're food or a drink of some sort, like a little shot or whatever. There's florals. You don't have to go too far with florals. You can repurpose. I love to repurpose things. Say if you're in a church when you are having a ceremony or another place, we can take all of those floral arrangements and repurpose. So you don't need to double up anything. A lot of people just go all out for both. And just wedding dresses and things like that. You can thrift a lot of things and do secondhand with all sorts of things. You can hire suits. Wedding transport, you don't always need a fancy car. You're just getting out of it, really, and that's for a picture. I would skip that if you want to save some money. Yeah, there's lots of different things. I definitely think that there's so many things you could do. Just stick to what you want and don't do anything for anyone else.
Okay.
My recommendation.
Apart from the marquee wedding, what would you say, in your opinion, is the biggest waste of money in weddings that you've seen?
Well, yeah, aside from that, biggest waste of money, I don't, there's so many different things. I think, going too far with, there's wedding entertainment, some people go a little too far with different things. They'll try and do too many things. I've seen some weddings where, you know, they want to do everything. They want a waffle van. They want a magician. They want an illustrator. You know, they want all of the things. I think you need to be focused on, yes, if you want your guests to have a great time, that's absolutely amazing, but you need to be realistic. I wouldn't go too far with all the entertainment side of things for that. Keep your guests entertained, but try and stick to a reasonable expectation that you can only really do so much. Because at the end of the day, it's not that necessary. People just want to enjoy spending time with you. I would cut out anything that eliminates that.
Okay. Emma, if people want to avail of your services, how do they do so?
Yeah, you can find me at my website, which is wednesdayweddingclub.ie. And I'm also on social media, same handle, so Wednesday Wedding Club. And yeah, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook anywhere.
Okay, thank you very much. Emma Greenbury, founder of Wednesday Wedding Club and also from Kildare Town. Thanks very much, Emma, for joining us.
Thanks so much, Cleva.
That's all we have time for today. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow between 2 and 3.